Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's November 21st, the day before Thanksgiving, and it's episode 536, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Chip.
When the pilgrims sailed, it was rough as it could be, and the motion of the ocean made them lose their tea. It was rocky where they landed, but they had to build a town, and their belts were on their hats till their pants fell down. Some got the scurvy, some got the flu, some got the run.
Yeah, quite a few.
Their food ran low, and their butts all froze, and they said,
"This Massachusetts winter blows."
Then a fella named Squanto came along one day with a barrel full of corn, and they all said,
"Hey, yeah, if you boil
it, you can bake it,
sure need a jar, and it makes clean ethanol to run your car."
They cleared the land, learned how to plow. Soon they were blessed with buttloads of chow, so they gave old Squanto and his friends a shout.
"Hey guys, it's America, let's all hang out."
So they had a huge feast. There was turkey by the ton. There was stuffing, mashed potatoes, and they just begun. There was sweet potato pie, there was pumpkin too, and a green bean casserole that tasted like poo.
Thanks for the grow, the wine and meal.
Thanks for tomorrow's Black Friday sale.
So make like a pilgrim, join in the fun, and party like it's 1621.
Yes,
party like it's 1621.
Well, there's a little jib-jab to get everybody going this morning. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
I like that.
Sketchy tune, isn't it? I love the line. I love the line. They wear their belts on their hats and their pants fell down. That was pretty good.
yeah, that was good.
So what are you doing? Are you staying home for Thanksgiving, or are you heading out to relatives?
Well, it's a little bit of both, actually. We're going to stay home for the actual Thanksgiving day. Chad and I don't have any family that lives anywhere near us. So to go see family, we have to either fly to Oklahoma, Georgia, or Florida. And from Arizona, all of those are pretty far. However, if you leave after Thanksgiving, it's like super cheap. They're like, "Oh, somebody wants to fly between Thanksgiving and Christmas? Go ahead. Here you go. We'll give it to you." So we actually are leaving like... We arrive in Oklahoma at midnight on Friday night. So we got their last flight of the day out of Phoenix. And we are coming home at about 4 a.m. on Tuesday morning. So it's going to be a nice short trip. And with those plane tickets, with my credit card, they were free. So that's why we're doing it.
Well, there you go. And you're staying the requisite 3 days and getting out.
In and out, baby. In and out. Here we go. Yes, I do. I love my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, the family, and everybody's going to be there. And they're actually going to have a second Thanksgiving, probably with leftovers on Saturday, so all of us can be there. But yeah, there's a limit. There's definitely a limit. In and out, 3 days.
Yeah, that's the right time. Now, I got to ask you, we were having this discussion yesterday around here. Are you a cranberry sauce in the jar or one of the chunky kind?
Can. It's in the can.
Me too. Yeah, Jennifer and I can't do the chunky kind. My mom used to make the chunky kind. I don't think anybody ate it.
It's because they put stems in it, and there's like all sorts of seeds or jelly you bite down, and they didn't get one of the seeds out. Or so I don't know. Give me the gooey stuff in the jar and the can, and I want it to be the exact shape of the can. You can't scoop it out. You have to like cut the bottom all the way off, and then shake it. You know.
Right. Cut it into slices. It has to be perfect round slices with a little, and it has the shape of the can in it.
Yep.
It has a little can mark. Yeah. It's perfect.
I don't eat turkey, though. So the rest, I eat a lot of cranberry. I eat a lot of mashed potatoes. And, give me some green bean casserole, and I'm happy.
Well, you know, this is one of those holidays where actually a vegetarian does pretty well, because usually people make a lot of sides, a lot more than they normally do at Thanksgiving. So you're pretty well covered at Thanksgiving.
You would think so, Glenn. You would think so. Except for I grew up in a Southern household. And what do Southerners cook with in every single dish?
Bacon or fatback.
Bacon or fatback. So I actually now had to, because the Southern women in my family, because we have Thanksgiving usually with my mom's family, the Southern women in that family were not going to give up the bacon chunks in the green beans. So they actually now make two versions. Everybody makes two versions of their food, and it pisses them off every single year that they have to make a separate version.
Are you the only vegetarian in your entire distended family?
Oh, without a doubt. Again, Southern women, Southern men. I'm weird. And it's the topic of
conversation.
They put bacon
in their stuffing.
I know they do. My aunt has to make a separate stuffing that doesn't have dead animals in it. I'm like, I don't understand why this is so hard. Why do you have to have something dead in every single one of your dishes? It's just not healthy.
I came across, while I was looking for the song to start the show today, I came across a really funny song, too, that I was going to play. And it's all about how wonderful Thanksgiving is, but the chorus is, except for the turkey. So everything is about how wonderful it is except for the turkey. And I thought about you, and I thought about playing that one. Then I found the Jib Jab one and had to do that. But it reminded me of you.
Yeah,
well, Jennifer, thanks. You have a show other than talking about cranberry sauce and turkey today. What's coming up?
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, we begin with benign banter betwixt our co-hosts regarding random thoughts, adventures, and harrowing horsey headlines. Next up, Victoria Spicer, the velvet voice of Horse and Country TV, alights with some lively chat from across the pond. And to wrap the show, Canadian eventer Stephanie Rhodes-Bosch stops by for a clever conversation about syndication. Stay tuned for the fray.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I think you're going first today, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, all of the giving the daily Winnie to Zenyatta's sister, Ablouissante, I figured that it's time to give it to somebody else, okay? So it's not going to the Zenyatta family. It's going to Black Caviar this time. Daily Winnie goes to superstar Australian race mare Black Caviar because she just won a very prestigious award, Racing Personality of the Year. Now, what's special about this is Racing Personality of the Year has never been won by a horse. It actually usually goes to trainers, jockeys, race callers, owners, anybody that has been kind of a big part of the racing industry. It's voted on by the Victorian Racing Media Association. And Black Caviar, first horse ever to win the award. And guess who she beat to win the award? She beat her trainer and her jockey to win Racing Personality of the Year. A couple other people were nominated as well, but without a doubt, she won. And they also said in the article here that she is likely to return to racing in probably the spring. They're hoping that she comes back for the Lightning Stakes, and that's actually going to be changed to be known as the Black Caviar Race. So she's going to come back. She is still winning awards, and she's amazing, and we love her.
How old is she? Is she four or five?
I don't know. I can't. You can't ask me questions
remember.
That aren't in front of me because I don't know. I can't remember how old she is.
Yeah, she's got a lot of time left yet. It's smart to bring her back at this point. You know, she's such a phenomenon, and another reason to bring her back is they fill those racetracks when she shows up.
Oh, without a doubt.
40,000-50,000 people. You're not getting 40,000-50,000 people on a normal race day in Australia. So. They're filling those tracks. That's terrific. Well, good job. Do you think the trainer and the jockey are like, are you kidding me? She doesn't know the difference. If we had won, it would have meant something.
You know, the owners of Black Caviar actually showed up to accept the award and on her behalf if she was to win. And They said they were delighted to see her acknowledged with such a prestigious award, and basically we'll let her know when we get back to the barn. So, like, just no clue. No clue. But she,
anyway,
she is the winner.
She is six, Jennifer says, born in 2006.
Okay.
So she's a little older than I thought she was. All right. I'm going to kind of do a combination of a Daily Winnie and a review here, and my Daily Winnie goes out to Daniel Day-Lewis, who played Lincoln in the movie that's out now, and let me tell you, Jamie, you haven't seen it yet, right?
Correct, I have not.
All right. No spoiler alerts here. Don't worry, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I do have to say that we walked out of there, Jennifer and I, and by the way, the movie's 2.5 hours, and by the time you add the half an hour of previews in, it was 3 hours of sitting on our butt there. You would have had 12 bathroom breaks in that movie. We walked out saying this was one of the best acted movies we have ever seen anytime, anywhere. The
right.
acting in this movie, and of course it's Steven Spielberg producing it, so you can tell it's a Steven Spielberg movie. The lighting and the camera work and just the atmosphere was definitely Spielberg. But Daniel Day-Lewis was unbelievable in this role, and truly one of the best acting things, because, you know, there wasn't a lot. This movie is a lot of close-ups and one-on-ones and just conversation about what's going on in Congress. And, you know, so there's not a lot of action. It's not an action movie. It's a very intelligent, heady movie. You have to pay attention to what's going on and to the characters. And there's some comedy in it. There's a lot of comedy in it, actually. But he was good at everything, just down to his movements and the way he bends over. And he just nailed this role. And I got to say that, you know, I said it was the best acted movie, not just because of Daniel Day-Lewis, who played Lincoln, but Sally Field as Mary Todd, who, you know, everybody that knows a little bit about history knows that Mary Todd was you know, a few bubbles shy of a full bottle. She
was an interesting character in history,
yes.
Glenn.
Yes, that comes across. Tommy Lee Jones, you know, what hasn't Tommy Lee Jones been terrific in, you know? And he plays sort of a third character in this movie, you know, way down the list, but an important character, Thaddeus Stevens. So he was terrific. I mean, great. And then there's James Spader. And if anybody ever watched Boston Legal, you'll remember James Spader from Boston Legal. And James Spader has a habit when he's an excellent actor, but he always plays James Spader. Now, he was playing a guy by the name of William Bilbo, who gets some of the comedy in the movie. But James Spader is James Spader, and he plays James Spader, and he is funny playing James Spader. So
now,
he was
James
terrific.
Spader, for those who don't know what movie you just mentioned, he was on The Office this past year. He was Robert California in the past couple of years, and he was very James Spader in that as well. I've never seen Boston Legal, but when you say James Spader, I remember him being on The Office. He kind of took over the whole kind of idea of The Office for a while and just was hysterical, just ridiculous and hysterical.
Yeah, and that's the way he is whenever he plays. You know, he just always plays that character. So he was terrific. I don't know. I think Sally Field could get Best Supporting Actress. She really knocked it out of the park. And there were times you were scared of her, and there were times you wanted to like her. I mean, you know, so she really did nail it. But if Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't win the Oscar for Abraham Lincoln, then it is rigged, because it was definitely one of the best acted movies ever. You're laughing. What?
Just because, generally speaking, you are not a person who becomes particularly passionate about the topic of movies. And it's just interesting to listen to you go,
well, I'm a history nut, though, too. I'm a real history buff. And this movie was, I mean, down to the horses in the background. By the way, he did ride a Morgan. So I just wanted to mention that. And there weren't fake Winnies. You'll be happy to know. Yay! Give Spielberg credit for that. But everybody should see this movie.
Well, you know, when the previews came out the first time, and they're like, Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, I'm like, Oscar, you don't have to see it to know that at this time of year, at a movie like that, with Daniel Day-Lewis, how many Oscars has that guy won? He is going to win the Oscar without a doubt.
did you know that he was not the first one slated for that role? That Spielberg's been trying to do this movie since the early 2000s, and he had Liam Neeson slated for that role. And Liam backed out. He just said, I don't want to do this movie. I don't want to do the role. And then he really, really had to talk Daniel Day-Lewis into it. Neither one of them wanted to do it because they didn't want to screw up playing Lincoln. Neither one of them wanted to be the guy. If you think about it, there hasn't been a whole lot of movies about Lincoln, you know. So neither one of them wanted to be the guy that screwed up Lincoln. So that's why they didn't want to do it. But he nailed it out of the park. It was excellent, excellent movie. It gets 12 flakes, 2 bales. Well worth seeing. And see it. The other thing, too, Jennifer, I think you'd agree with this. See it at the movie theater. This is going to be much better. It's widescreen. It's going to be much better at the movie theater just because of the visual. It's Steven Spielberg. Any of his movies you want to see at the movie theater.
It's very rich visually. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's got a surprise ending. If you think you know what happens at the end, you don't.
Yes, you do. We all know what happens at the end.
It did catch us off guard. We will say that. It did catch us off guard. Very, 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 very good movie. You will love it, Janie. You're going to love this movie.
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to go see it. Once I see Life of Pi, then I can go see this. Are you going to go see Life of Pi?
No.
You what? Oh, my
no.
God. You have to. You have the to.
Preview. I saw the preview and went, who would see this movie? It looks ridiculous.
Oh, my God. It'll change your life. Like, the book changes my change your life. I'm telling you, it's going to be amazing. And if it's not amazing, I will never tell you. I will tell you it's amazing.
I'm going to ask her next week when she comes back on the show from her trip and go, oh, how was the movie? I didn't see it.
I'm going to be like, it was amazing. It was so amazing. It was incredible. But no, I mean, when I read the book, I was like, I screamed. So you just have to, like, you have to, yeah. It's going to be amazing. Amazing. So,
we have to get on with the show here. I just want to mention Back on Track. For the past year, we've been telling you about how effective Back on Track products are. Sometimes, though, we forget that they have an amazing human side and a human line of products. And, you know, what rider doesn't need a little help with aches and pains and stiffness and everything that happens there? Well, I was having a conversation during a recent show with Wendy from the Driving Radio Show, Dr. Wendy Ying, and we had this conversation that turned out to be about Back on Track. Let's take a listen to that one.
All right. Weekend Warrior Syndrome.
Yes.
Wendy Ying has personal experience. She's sitting here with a weight belt on right now.
It's not a weight belt. It's actually a Back on Track wrap.
Oh, it is a Back on Track wrap?
That Randy and Keedy Cadwell gave me because
I was
walking around.
One of our sponsors here on the Horse Radio Network.
Yes. It's my Back on Track wrap, which works very, very well because I was with them when I had the back injury, and I think they couldn't stand listening to me.
Whine
and say, slow down. I can't take big steps. So they gave me a Back on Track wrap, which I love. I'm now a believer of the Back on Track. It really made
they're
a big difference.
The Back on Track products really work.
Mm-hmm.
We keep telling people, and they don't listen. They work.
They work.
Well, that was Dr. Wendy Ying there professing about the Back on Track back brace that they have. And you can find all of their products at backontrackproducts.com. If you want to check out what they have on the human side that can help with your aches and pains, you'll find at the top there's links to all the different human and animal and dog.
And make underwear.
And they make underwear. Are you still wearing your Back on Track underwear, Jamie?
Dude, after I hurt my back falling off Jet, I wear that sucker all the time. I sleep in them, and they're actually supposed to be Chad's. So
I
got the box.
Yeah,
I got the boxer briefs for Chad. I was like, well, let's see what happens. But yeah, I wear them. They're mine. So give it a go.
Well, that's backontrackproducts.com. Hey, a couple things here. Tomorrow there won't be a show because of Thanksgiving here in the United States. We will be off tomorrow. On Friday, we're going to present to you the 4th Annual Equestrian Collections Holiday episode on Friday because it is Black Friday. We figured why not present our shopping episode that day. So we're going to have a bunch of good ideas for the horse person in your life for holiday shopping. And speaking of good ideas, people have been, our listeners, especially in the morning show here, have been bugging us about this forever. And we finally accomplished it. We finally have a Horse Radio Network merchandise store open. with about a dozen different products that you can get with Horse Radio Network logo, the cute little horse, microphone horse that everybody loves so much. Plus, we have some Horses in the Morning products over there as well. We have hats and saddle pads and shirts, mugs, some holiday gift mugs and things like that. So check it out. You can just go to horsesinthemorning.com and you'll see the link there to the HRN merchandise store. You'll see the big link there. If you want to go directly there, it's hrnstore.com. You can buy your Horse Radio Network addicted friends. You can now buy them stuff at our Horse Radio Network merchandise
Whatever.
Store.
You can buy yourself stuff.
You can buy yourself when you don't want. This is the first opportunity because we've never had stuff for sale. We've only ever had it as a giveaway.
Which is better, but we definitely recommend trying to win it. But if you just can't live without it, you got to buy it. I mean, just get it for yourself because
right.
nobody's going to buy you what you want. Only you. That's my the Bah Humbug Christmas sales tactic right there.
Thank you, Jamie. So check it out. Or just go to horsesinthemorning.com and follow the link to the store. We would love you to be giving a Horse Radio Network something for Christmas.
I've got a happy story for you, Glenn.
Yeah, go ahead. Happy story,
okay.
Day before Thanksgiving.
Happy story, happy story. Sarah Ostholt, who won the individual silver with a mare named Wega at the London Games, found out that she was going to lose the ride on her three-star mount, Mrs. Medicott. Do you remember Mrs. Medicott from the event team?
Yeah.
Okay. She's on the Swedish team, and she was going to lose the ride on the horse. The owner had started to say, hey, I'm thinking about selling. I'm thinking about, you know, trying to, you know, kind of capitalize on the fact that we have an Olympic horse. And so she was going to lose the ride. And she was actually supposed to be guaranteed the ride through the 2016 Olympic Games in Brazil. So she was talking about it. One of her friends, who is a dressage rider, started a Facebook page called Saving Mrs. Medicott for Sarah Ostholt. And people could donate money. Well, within 24 hours, the group had 12,000 members and had accumulated 7,000 euros. After two weeks, there was 56,000 members and over 100,000 euros.
Most oh, my God.
Gave 10 euros a piece, and guess what? She gets to keep the horse. How awesome is that?
And probably buy two more.
Well, probably not. that's an Olympic-priced horse right there. So she just, you know, she said she was so touched and surprised when she heard about the Facebook group. She says it was a very, very kind, nice thing to do. Of course, I didn't think it would reach so many people as it did. I was following it on Facebook and saw how it became more and more, and it was amazing how many people want to support me. And she's just so incredibly grateful. She says it's pretty amazing that not only Swedish people, but people from other countries were sending money for her to be able to keep this horse. So just a really happy story, the girl and her horse.
That's terrific. Well, congratulations to her. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about syndication here a little bit later, about syndicating horses. And, you know, it is one of the problems that you have when you have an owner that, you know, and you don't own the horse. You know, we've talked about this numerous times, but it's something that, you know, you hope is not going to happen where the owner decides to cash in. But at some point, these owners are in it for money, too, you know?
Yeah, and the owner actually had agreed to let this whole thing, the nice owner, agreed to let them keep raising money and to see how far she could get. And so all of the funds were gathered, and then Sarah had to put some extra money in on top of it, and then that's how she bought the mare. But nice of the owner to be like, you know, I'll let this play out. Let's see what happens.
Well, very good. One of the other things in the news today was that Questing, you remember Questing, the racehorse who I had picked for the Breeders' Cup and who pulled up in the early stages, remember the Ladies' Classic, came out of the gate real slow, and then the jockey pulled her up. Well, she had a chip removed from her hind ankle. Apparently there was a problem in there. And but it looks like Questing's going to be fine and is a leading contender for the three-year-old Philly Championship. And they're going to try and bring Questing back for the Belmont Spring Meeting. So looks like Questing will make a return. I guess Chip's, I guess if you get it out, it's fine, right?
Well, and the fact that it's in the hind ankle is a lot better than being in one of the front fetlocks. So they're so good arthroscopically, and they can keep it so clean and so nice and just go in there and get it and not make too big of a deal about it. So good for them. I'm glad they were able to find it. He did say that this had nothing to do with pulling her up because, remember, she banged into the gate pretty hard, they think, coming out.
Yeah.
So that made her not want to run. Also, I got a happy story for you, too. Frankel, our favorite European racehorse, his half-brother named Bullet Train. Do you remember almost every race that Frankel ran in, there was a horse named Bullet Train who always came in second, and he was kind of the pace setter, maybe not always second or third or fourth, because he was always setting the pace for Frankel in all of his races this year and then one race last year. He's actually going to be moving to Kentucky. They came out of the same mare, I believe, and he's going to be moving to Judmont Farms. Well, they haven't said which farm he's going to go to. It's an undisclosed farm in 2013, but he's owned by Judmont. So he probably is going to go to Judmont in Lexington, but just cool that his Frankel's bloodlines are going to be in the U.S.
Very good, very good. Well, I just posted. You have to go look at Facebook. I hope it went through. I don't know if it did or not. You know, Facebook's being funny today. So if anybody's trying to post on our Facebook page, I'll try and post it again. There was a picture that I just got from Kat, who was obviously listening this morning. So I'll try and get it posted in there. It didn't work. So I'll try and get it posted in a little bit later. Go ahead.
You're going to
another happy story?
I do. Well, this one's not very happy, but it's something I have to tell you guys about. You're going to appreciate it, Glenn, because obviously you have an affinity for miniature donkeys, being that you love them so much. Wait, what's your opinion on donkeys?
They're all possessed by zombies.
Okay, that's what it is. Oh, not that you love them, they're all possessed by zombies. Well, you remember in the movie Shrek, there's a miniature donkey named Donkey.
Oh, I love Shrek. Shrek's
Shrek,
one of my favorites.
Well, there was actually a miniature donkey who was the inspiration behind the computer animated donkey. You know how they kind of like will put the figure out the way that they move and all that for CGI stuff. And so there was a donkey that was used for the actual donkey in Shrek, and his name is Perry. He's now 18 years old. Well, he was attacked by a German Shepherd on November 6th. And this is the same German Shepherd who attacked him on September 25th. So this 18-year-old donkey, bless his little heart, he lives in Palo Alto, California, suffered bites to his jaw, belly, and legs, and spent several days at the Peninsula Equine Medical Center in Menlo Park. Well, obviously, now after two attacks, the dog has been deemed dangerous. It had to be removed. They didn't have to euthanize it, but they had to remove it from the city. All this ridiculousness. And there's another donkey in the field with Perry that was not bothered in either one of the encounters with the German Shepherd. And I was reading the story. I'm like, oh, my gosh, poor donkey, you know, poor thing. And then I realized, poor German Shepherd, because you know how annoying having donkey live next door to you would be? And finally, probably the German Shepherd just couldn't take it anymore. You got to think about it.
He snapped.
He's like, shut up. I can't listen to you anymore. Because the other donkey wasn't hurt. So it had to be that he was really annoying because he would drive you crazy. Shrek, don't you imagine hearing Eddie Murphy's voice next door all the time talking like that?
Yeah. Nonstop. I didn't know that it was actually taken off of a real live donkey.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know how they how they figured out how to do Shrek. I mean, I can't imagine he was taken off of anybody real, but they did, I guess, to how they figure out how the moving movement goes and all that. They wanted to get it all right. So this is the donkey that they kind of used. You know, they put the little geode or the stick things on everybody on the MCGI and the green screen, and they tracked how you move. You ever see the making of Avatar?
Yes, yes, yep.
Same kind of deal that I'm sure that they did with the donkey. So they figured out how he moved anyway, but he's going to be fine. He's now back home and resting comfortably.
There you go. Well, that's terrific. Is Shrek the one they're coming out with the 3D right now?
Oh, good Lord, who knows? There's like 27 Shreks at this point.
All right, now go to Facebook and hit refresh on the Horses in the Morning page, and you'll see the cat sent this over for me to post. It's how I feel about My Little Pony.
Nice. Nice.
Anybody wants to see that, head over to Horses in the Morning. We're going to take a break here for a commercial, then we're going to be back with Victoria from Horse and Country TV in just a minute. But first, we have to hear all about Fleeceworks. We'll be right back.
Fleeceworks manufactures pure Australian merino sheepskin and merino wool saddle pads and accessories. Their pads produce a vital thermal balancing layer to pull excess moisture and heat away from the horse's back, allowing muscles to work at maximum capacity without overheating. Fleeceworks Australian merino wool is breathable and hydrophilic, able to hold and store 35% of its own weight in liquid. A longtime staple of the medical field, Australian merino fibers have no equal when it comes to delivering a temperature-controlled, pressure-absorbing layer. The Fleeceworks philosophy, minimum bulk, maximum performance, and they have a variety of anatomically correct pads incorporating technologies and designs that address the individual needs of every horse and rider. Ask for Fleeceworks saddle pads and accessories by name at your local tack and feed store, or visit them online at fleeceworks.com.
Well, we've got our next guest here on the line, our first guest actually for today, and of course, we all love listening to her. Her name is Victoria from Horse and Country TV. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're calling from your cell phone, so we won't keep you tremendously long, but I heard some really, really good news, and I'm hoping you can tell me about it. Did I hear that you are making the trip over the pond, coming to the U.S.?
I am indeed. It's the second time I've been to America, and the first time was several years ago, and I went to Wyoming and South Dakota on a very cool trip. So this time I'm coming back and doing loads and loads of places in the space of about 2 weeks.
Wow, 2 week tour of the U.S. Where can you highlight some of the places you're going?
I'm going flying into New York and then off to Vegas and then down to Miami and then off to Jacksonville, strangely, and then back to New York and home.
Okay, wait, let me get this straight. You have the entire country to go to, and you're starting on the far East Coast, then you're flying across the country all the way over to Vegas, and you're flying back across the country, the Southeast, to go to Florida, and then you're coming all the way back up to New York.
Indeed, because it was cheaper to go New York return, so that's why.
All right.
No other exciting reason.
Just so you know, that's really far.
I know. I'm tired.
Where everything is a train ride away, okay?
And also, I'd rather it was a train ride away because I'm not a brilliant flyer, so this could be fun.
All right, well, let me just tell you that Vegas is only 4 short hours from me, and I never need an excuse to go. So let me know the dates. We'll go hit the blackjack tables together and get ourselves into some trouble.
That sounds amazing. I think I'm being abandoned for 2 days when I'm in Vegas. So, come up and entertain me.
There we go. Yeah, you will need help getting entertained in Vegas. That is what they do. That's what they're best at.
Sounds good.
Well, so tell us a little bit about what's going on in England. I know that, first of all, tell us what Express Eventing is, and then we can congratulate Lucinda Fredericks for winning.
Express Eventing is a competition that came up a few years ago, and it's basically trying to, I don't know if there's a kind of comparison, but in cricket we have test match cricket and then 2020 cricket, which is a lot faster and kind of all in done in one day. And this is what express eventing tries to do. So you do your dressage, and then you come back and do cross-country and show jumping all in the same arena at the same time. And it keeps changing its format every year. There's a different version of it. And so last weekend, there was a big show in London called Horse World Live. It's a brand new show with lots of demonstrations and shopping and things. And this was the opening leg of the new series. I still don't quite understand the format it's working under. It is run as an event, but this time it was like teams and older riders and younger riders. So I'm not entirely sure how it worked. But Lucinda Fredericks won, so it was good for her. And she was back in action on her Greenwich horse. So, I'm glad to see she's done well in London after not having the best success in the summer.
Can I ask just a salacious gossip question?
Of course.
And maybe you'll know the answer. So Lucinda Fredericks is married to Clayton Fredericks. Lucinda
yes.
Fredericks is over there in England right now. Both of them live in Australia. Clayton has now moved to the U.S. Is there drama there, like, in the relationship? Did she kick him out and go to Canada? I mean, what's the deal?
I couldn't possibly comment on that. We did get a press release from their marketing team saying that Clayton was setting up base and expanding the business into America. So that's the official party line, and I wouldn't know anything apart from that, I'm afraid. So,
wow.
as far as I know, they're still Team Fredericks, but there's going to be Team Fredericks USA and Team Fredericks in England.
Sounds like an ununited team front to my, you know, there's nobody I love more than Clayton and Lucinda Fredericks. They are some of my favorite eventers out there. So I hope that everything's going okay. You got to admit, you thought for just a minute, you're like, huh, how's that going to work?
Yeah,
I
did kind of think of that. But then when you heard that he was attempting to be the coach for the Canadian team going forward, it kind of made sense he'd be here. But I expect there'll be conjugal visits occasionally, I'm sure.
I haven't had a press release about that.
We sent a prize to the United States for conjugal visit.
Exactly. You won't hear about that on Horse and Country TV. You won't tell
no.
us about that.
Right. You have to come to our show to hear that kind of gossip.
Exactly. Actually, if you read Eventing Nation, eventingnation.com, it's a great eventing website for over here in the U.S., but they just did a whole great long story about Clayton teaching a clinic up in Canada, and the picture is him wearing 17 coats. Like, jacket is a ridiculous amount of clothes. You barely see his face. He's wearing so many clothes in Canada. And I started to think, you should have coached down south, buddy. You should have gone
exactly.
to the U.S.
He's getting gradually colder. He leaves Australia to come to Britain, which is freezing, and now he's gone to Canada, which is even more freezing. So
yeah.
I don't agree with this. You should go
You're
somewhere
going
warmer.
The wrong way. You're going
exactly.
the wrong way. Oh boy. So anyway, it was a great article on a clinic that he did up in Canada. It's worth a read if anybody's interested. Okay. Now, does this kind of weird stuff only happen in England? Tell us about the next story.
I'm quite embarrassed because not only did it happen in, well, it happened in Britain, it happened in Scotland, my home country, of course.
Oh.
And so there was a man walking around in the streets of Glasgow, and he saw a police horse and decided that they looked a bit hungry and that he wanted to offer them some of his sausage roll. And as we all know, sausage roll is not part of the horse's diet. And the policeman asked the man to desist doing such a thing, and he got very angry and upset and has since been arrested. So he is now going to court for feeding a horse sausage roll.
Okay, so he fed a horse sausage. And the
yeah.
horse, yeah, my horse would spit sausage out, well, maybe. I've got probably one or two that would eat it.
I was going to say, you don't know that.
Yeah.
One of my horses has read the book about being a horse, and he won't eat anything apart from, like, horse food and carrots and mint. Whereas I've had a pony before who'd eat anything you gave her. So if you gave her a sausage roll, she'd probably eat it. So, I don't. And these police horses, they were working, they were on the beat, so maybe they were a bit peckish. I'm not sure horses ever look hungry, though. I think that man might have been a little bit
I think they look hungry all the time. Have you seen Beaker when we go out to feed him? He's like going to bite my face off. So, yeah, I kind of think they look hungry all the time.
Starving to death. That's what I say to my horses all the time. I go to feed and they just start carrying on, going just crazy. And it's, I'm like, you guys, I'm so sorry that you haven't had concentrated grain in the last 8 hours. Sorry. Sorry you had to be eating hay and grass the whole time. God, you must be starving to death. Ridiculous.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible, isn't it? all right. And then now you've done, you guys that did the research or somebody else did some research on how jockeys affect the performance of the horse? We've talked about this a lot with, you know, coming around the home stretch at a horse race. You're watching one jockey versus the other and using the whip and not going to the whip. And there's a study now done about how jockeys affect the racehorses. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's been undertaken by the Royal Veterinary College with funding from the levy board, who basically take money from betting and reinvest it into racing in the sport and prize giving, and also into research like this and improving the sport. And they know that jockeys do affect racehorse performance. And, of course, you know, you have some jockeys that you just know have got a better chance. They're able to get a tune out of certain horses. But now they're actually going to do it on a scientific basis by putting sensors in the jockey's helmets and in the saddle cloth of the horse and in the horse's hooves. And then they're going to work out the differences in riding technique and how it affects the horse.
I can't even imagine how difficult that would be because, like, I was thinking, okay, they put a different jockey on the same horse, you know, Monday through Friday, but the horse is going to be different every single day. That's got to be a huge undertaking of a study to do.
Indeed. So, yes, hopefully they'll be able to actually do enough sample sizes to get a true reflection on the difference it is. But I guess it is hard, and if you're not in a race environment, will we be able to tell as much if they're just doing work riding when they're not actually aiming without the kind of drama of competition and the pressure of wanting to win? So we will see.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before we let you go, you guys did a blog, and, you know, it was funny at first, and now I'm a little sick of it. I'm a little sick of the Gangnam Style thing with every single person doing their own video. But this one's actually funny because this Gangnam Style, Glenn, was done by royalty. Victoria, tell us about the new video.
Yes, well, we mentioned last week that the eventers were due to do their Gangnam Style dance, and so they've put the video up on YouTube, so we've added it to our site, and it's basically got lots of our Olympians doing a dance, and then it suddenly cuts to Gangnam Style as mouthed by none other than Zara Phillips, and it's very funny. They're there dancing in their full riding kit, including hats.
Perfect. Well, you can find all of this on horseandcountry.tv anything else on the website that we need to know about?
Just keep adding lots of videos, so do head to horseandcountry.tv/video and you can browse through hundreds and hundreds of free content there, including programs and short clips and riders doing Gangnam Style dances.
Well, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you again next week. We are going to celebrate Thanksgiving. Do you guys have any sort of Thanksgiving celebrations over in Europe?
We don't, I'm afraid. And I was hoping to be in America by the time Thanksgiving came around so I could experience it, but sadly not. So I had to delay the trip a few days. So one of these days I'll make it over for Thanksgiving.
Well, it's okay. You don't need to, because I can paint you a really good picture right now of Thanksgiving in my house growing up. We would have my mom's entire family over, and my dad would be there, and then maybe some neighbors and some people, and they all come over to eat. But the drinking starts around 10 a.m. with my family, going through different, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's wet and it has alcohol in it, they will drink it. And so the drinking starts. So by the time actually people eat, everybody's so drunk that, you know, somebody's crying, somebody has fallen off the chair, somebody is thrown up already, and then they go to eat, and of course they eat all this turkey, and then in the next 15 minutes, everybody's asleep. On the couches, on the floor, there's football games on TV, American football. It's not pretty. It's not glamorous. It's not beautiful, but it's family, and you got to love them. So
you basically described my ideal day of drinking too much, eating too much, and sleeping while sports
going on. She
wants
to join in. This would be perfect for her.
It's my perfect day.
That is awesome. I like you more today than I did yesterday, so that's good. All right, we'll talk to you again next week, Victoria. Thank you.
Thank you,
Victoria.
Bye.
Well, our song today is brought to you by Dr. Roses. You know, Dr. Roses, we've been talking about it the last couple of weeks. It is the skin treatment salve and spray that's all natural. It's anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antifungal, antiseptic, and every anti you can think of. This product really does help promote the healing of skin rashes and relieves inflammation and irritation and promotes the healing of wounds. It really, really does work. We started to get comments on it now on our Facebook page from people who have gotten it and are using it. You know, rain rot is one of the things that it's been very effective for, as well as just simple cuts and abrasions and scrapes, and it works on dog hot spots. You know, there's nothing worse than a dog who has a hot spot and is constantly itching and scratching and licking. But you can eliminate all of that just by finding some Dr. Rose's remedy. Now, if you have a local tack shop or a vet clinic or a pet store, if you write to Dr. Rose's through their website, they'll send you out some free samples. But if you need to buy some for yourself, the best way to do it is if you can't find it at your local tack shop, first of all, tell your local tack shop they need to get it in. But if you can't find it, go to drrosesremedies.com and tell them that Glenn and Jamie sent you. It's drrosesremedies.com for the skin treatment that you just want to have a jar of this around all the time. drrosesremedies.com. Well, our song today, I thought, well, you know, let's play a little Templeton Thompson. What a better song to play that for Thanksgiving here in the United States than Wake Up Grateful, because hopefully that's what we'll all be doing tomorrow morning before the drinking begins at 10 a.m.
My blessings. I'm just so glad to be alive. I do my best to learn lessons, cause I don't think we get to do this twice. This thing called life. This thing called life. Cup of coffee on my back porch. I sit and watch a new day dawn. I don't take one thing for granted. It just don't last for very long. Thing called life. Oh, thing called life.
Every day I wake up.
What the name of that song is. You'll never guess in 100 years what the name of that song is by Templeton Thompson.
I woke up in a bad mood.
That's it. That was exactly, I don't know how you got that. Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair today. We are brought to you today by BackOnTrackProducts.com. The Horse Radio Network show highlights for the week. The driving radio show is out, and Dr. Wendy Ying answered some listener questions. Matter of fact, a whole hour of listener questions. She seems to get a lot of them. When you're a veterinarian, you get a lot of questions. So we took time while we were down in Sarasota. Actually, we actually recorded the show, Jamie, by her pool in the backyard. So you can hear all about sick moms, bits, colitis, false martingales, all kinds of stuff. So that's on the Driving Radio Show at drivingradioshow.com. Well, now we have the third part in our holiday helmet series that we're doing in conjunction with Charles Owen and RidersForHelmets.com. And in this part, we learn a little bit about the standards on helmets and what do all of those symbols mean inside your helmet and how important are they. So let's take a listen to that. Glenn the Geek here, founder of the Horse Radio Network. We are excited to bring you a special holiday helmet mini-series, giving the gift of safety, purchasing a helmet for your loved ones at Christmas. In cooperation with Charles Owen and Riders for Helmets, we have created this six-part mini-series to highlight some amazing real-life stories and some tips on buying helmets as gifts. Today we have Roy from Charles Owen's back with us to talk about what all those symbols and certifications mean in your helmets. So, Roy, there are a lot, as we said, there are a lot of symbols and numbers and things. There's a lot of standards and certifications. What do I need to know as a person going to buy a helmet? What do I need to look for inside the helmet to make sure I'm getting one that's safe for my head for riding my horse or driving my horse?
Well, a lot of people just want to look, just tell me the symbol I need to have inside the helmet, because there's got to be one standard that's best, that is the super standard.
Right.
Now, the thing about standards is standards represent accidents. And if you go for the standard that is the toughest, then that's great if you have that tough accident. But if you fall onto a sand surface one of these riding arenas, then that may not actually give you the best protection for that type of accident. So the best thing to do is to look for as many standards as you can do, because each standard tests for a different set of accidents.
Okay.
And that's going to give you the biggest range of protection. Rather than looking for the one with the ultimate, and I mean, we've just produced one for those people that are concerned about that horrible accident, the rotational fall, and we've just produced one with four safety standards in. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's the safest helmet, because obviously the safest helmet is the one that fits your head. But if you're not going to have that accident and you're not concerned, you know, you don't see yourself particularly at risk from those extreme accidents, you don't need to have that level of safety. You want that the standard that's going to give you the right protection. Now, of course, alongside standards is the guarantees that you're going to get from having other marks from independent testing bodies, things like the SCI mark and the CE mark. And there's a funny heart-shaped symbol, which is the British Safety Institute. They do independent testing on the products, and it's those marks that really give you that sense of security that you're not just relying on the manufacturer saying this is a great product, but these certification marks are saying somebody else is standing up and willing to put their logo on this product to say we would recommend you buying this helmet.
Well, the one symbol that I see the most here in the United States, and that I think everybody's familiar with because it says it on your horse show applications and things, is SEI. It has to have the SEI stamp on the inside. Tell us about that.
Well, that's correct. I mean, the SEI is the minimum requirement by the USEF and various horse show organizations and various barns, because they want you to have a minimum level of safety. But of course, if you're buying the gift of safety for somebody else, somebody who you really care for, are you really just going to be looking for the minimum? And this is where you can start to look at multiple standards and multiple certifications, because with that extra level of scrutiny and each person looking for something slightly different, the more safety marks, the more safety certifications you can have on a product, you're not buying somebody just the minimum level of safety. You're buying somebody the best safety you can have. And it's quite common, you know, people kind of spend, scrimp and save on trying to feed their horse, and they'll often go along and say, oh, well, you know, I'll just get something that's going to, you know, that looks like it's going to save my head, and I'll just put that on. But then when you're giving a gift, this is an opportunity where you can say, do you know what? I actually care about you so much that I think you want something above the basic. And that's where you're looking for this extra certification.
And Charles Owen helmets have that.
Oh, Charles Owen have a whole range. We have some introductory helmets which have two safety standards on. The majority of them are three safety standards, and we have just launched for the person that's really scared of that rotational fall, a fourth safety standard with four certifications.
Well, Roy, when I used to have our own store and we used to be fitting helmets for people, one of the questions we used to get all the time was, if I buy the more expensive helmet, is that the safer helmet?
Well, not necessarily, because the cost of producing a helmet sometimes is in the design and style, maybe the fabrics that are used, and maybe you're just wanting a helmet with a very complex, very lightweight style, and that all adds to the cost. And of course, there are some people out there that feel that people who want to buy the best will expect that by paying a high price, they will get the best. But that isn't necessarily always the case. When we're looking for a helmet, you know, and really we do some introductory helmets that have a huge amount of safety built in, because we do take care of the new riders that come into our community that perhaps don't want to spend a huge amount of money And by removing pieces of leather and going down to nylon straps, you can really pare back the cost of manufacture of a helmet without necessarily affecting the cost. So standards are a great way to look at it, and you'll be surprised that sometimes the highest price helmet isn't necessarily the one with the most safety standards.
Well, this has been very interesting. You know, we're continuing this series in the next part where we talk about how a safe functional helmet can also look stylish. You and I have attended a few helmet symposiums together, and one of the things for helmet adoption that we discussed to increase helmet adoption was that they have to be stylish. So that's what we're going to talk about the next time.
I look forward to it.
Thank you to Riders for Helmets for everything they do for helmet awareness and safety. You can visit them at riders4helmets.com. And thank you to Charles Owen. You can visit them at charlesowen.co.uk. Well, Jamie, before we get to our next guest, I wanted to mention to you that we did have somebody that died that actually developed something that we've talked about a number of times, and that's the body condition scoring system that we tend to use for horses. That was Dr. Don Henneke, professor at Tarleton State University in Texas, died at the age of 60 after a battle with cancer. So he was the one that actually came up with that formula we all use when we look at a horse and say, oh, he's a five, you know, that system. So I just wanted to mention that.
All right.
Are you there, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. All right, wasn't sure if you were still there. All right, good.
I didn't have anything to add, so I just figured
okay,
I'd
good.
Keep quiet.
All right, no problem. Well, we have our next guest on here. She is a upcoming superstar from Canada, Stephanie Rhodes-Bosch. She is an eventer and was a silver medalist at the WEG in 2010, and we're excited to have her on the show with us this morning. And Stephanie, Jennifer tells us that you're riding right now.
I am. I am hacking around a hayfield here in Woodbine, Maryland.
Oh, well, we love that.
It's a pretty sunny day. I actually can't see a cloud in the sky, so it's a nice day to be riding.
Well, you know, we love it when our guests are on the phone and they're actually riding, and especially if we can hear the clip-clop. So if you could ride someplace like on the paddock or something so we can hear it, that's great.
Oh, unfortunately, I am in a little bit of a muddy spot right now. So
okay.
Use your imagination.
Well, now, you're in Maryland
so what's the
right
weather
now.
Like?
Is that where you have a home base?
Yeah, is it cold?
It's been hovering around the freezing mark during, like, overnight. We had a few really cold nights, like low mid-20s. But the last sort of 10 days has been in the low 50s during the day, sort of low 30s at night. I mean, it's reasonable, but I prefer it when it's 75 all the time, but don't we all?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Well, now, Stephanie, I got a note from you that you're trying to do something that a lot of the riders are seeking to do at this point. Tell us about syndication and what you're trying to do and what a syndicate is when it comes to horses like in the eventing world.
Sure. Well, a syndicate sort of sounds like a complicated term. A lot of people have never heard it before. Basically, it's an ownership group. Most event horses end up being owned by someone other than the rider, just because, you know, us riders, we tend to not be of that demographic that can really afford to do this all. You know, we're kind of the athlete part of it, and we always need people to be supportive of our careers and what we're trying to do. But when that responsibility falls down to one person, that's a big, you know, a big commitment, a big expense, and it can be a lot of fun to get a group of people together to sort of form a team to get behind an event horse. It's a really commonly done practice these days, especially. You probably have heard press about, like, the Neville Bardo Syndicate, which is Boyd Martin's, of course, top horse, and everybody's heard that story in the last year and a half here. But more and more people are doing it because I think more and more people are realizing that it provides an opportunity for people to get involved with a top-level horse, and they don't have to foot the entire bill. And like I said before, the team mentality, I think, can be really fun for people. So
They can get involved without having to jump 12-foot-high fences either on a cross-country
exactly.
course.
I mean, not every eventing enthusiast is wanting to be on the horse, you know? There's a lot of people who are super excited about the sport and super excited about their horses and their athletes, but they have no inclination to ride themselves. So it's a great way to get people involved. And us riders, you know, we really need it. I think of, you know, I was 9th at the World Games in 2010, and of the 10 horses in the top 10, and probably if I looked into it further, I was the only rider who owned my own horse. And, you know, I was very lucky to find Port Authority when I was a teenager, but, you know, I essentially, my parents and I, you know, spent my college fund and then some producing him and maintaining him. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity, but I'd love to do it again with another horse. And I know that that's not a possibility for me. So I'm hopeful that I can find some people out there who take an interest in this really lovely young horse that I actually was given off the racetrack a couple years ago, who is turning out to be really fun. So that's my goal over the next couple of months, is to try and get a couple people involved and then, you know, hopefully just keep building on that.
So Stephanie, tell us about this track horse that you have, because, you know, I think if people are going to want to get behind it, we should know what we're investing in.
Absolutely. I think that's a huge part of why people get involved, is the story sort of means something to them and the horse is exciting to them. In 2010, in the Florida season, which for me started in January of 2010, I was down in Ocala training with David O'Connor in preparation for my first go around Rolex with Port Authority. And part of what I was doing to support myself was I was exercising babies at a training track, which was exciting, and one of those things that I'm not sure I ever really want to do again, but it helped me out that spring, and you know, certainly was a good experience. And part of the reason why it was such a good experience was because I came across a very, very nice two-year-old and a very generous trainer and owner who, you know, really just wanted what was best for the horse, which was refreshing. So basically my day-to-day was riding all these just-turned two-year-old thoroughbreds that were barely broke. You know, we were getting them started. That was my job, was to help get these horses trained. So most of my morning was spent, like, keeping horses' heads up, trying desperately not to get bucked off. And there was this one two-year-old gelding who wasn't much to look at the time. You know, two-year-old horses can be really awkward. But the first time I sat on him, I just had this incredible, like, feeling of being drawn to him. I just loved him. Every time you got on him, and it didn't matter if he'd been off for 5 days, he just was totally happy to do his job, walked quietly out to the round pen, trotted and cantered around, learned his lead changes in 2 days, like, just such a good egg. And fantastic quality of movement, like, just a big floaty trot, really nice uphill canter, and just a sweet boy. And it was partially nice because after riding all the short back chestnut fillies who just didn't really want to play, it was nice to get on a big, sweet gelding who was actually a really high quality horse. So we trained him. I stopped riding for him, for that trainer, the middle of April so I could go off to Kentucky. And I kept in good touch with the trainer. We actually still keep in good touch about several things, including this horse. He's really quite well bred. He's a Seattle Slough grandbaby out of a mare that was pretty successful. So they had high hopes for him. Continued to train him through the summer and fall. Never really could get him to perform. And they ended up giving him to me after he lost his first race. Like, I think he pretty much just thought he was running with his friends in the on the track, like not very motivated to go fast. So they gave him to me as a three-year-old, and he had like that whole summer off. I put him into work a little over a year ago after Port Authority got hurt last fall. So I started eventing him early on in 2012, and he is just, he's pretty good at it. He's a real natural with the dressage. His quality of movement has gotten better and better. And he loves
okay.
the job. He just really
loves
it.
I got to cut you off because, you know, from listening to you, I'm listening like he had all this time off. He was a racehorse, 3 years old. We gave him summer off. I started him back in the fall and started eventing January. What is wrong with you people? How do you do that? You take the greenest grass and then start competing it immediately.
Well, he for his name is Mosby, and like I said, he's a really generous, kind, sweet horse who loves nothing more than to just be a part of something. He doesn't care if it's being groomed, being ridden, like whatever. He likes to have attention. So after Ollie got hurt last fall, I, as you can imagine, was pretty depressed. I didn't really have any other irons in the fire at the time. So here I was, it was cold and rainy, and I was hand grazing my horse that I was pretty sure I, you know, was seeing the end of some of my goals right there in front of me. So I was pretty depressed. So this nice little 3.5-year-old became like my focus. I rode him for 4 days a week, kind of on the top of a mountain. He was on field board at my friend's place at the time because I couldn't, you know, afford a stall for him. So he was out with a pony, 2-year-old, and I was sort of hopping on him on a windy fall day and riding him on the top of a mountain, and he couldn't care less. He was just perfect. So it's his demeanor is just to be a worker. And then when I got down to Florida last November, he went into more consistent work. You know, I took him over to David and Karen O'Connor's Meredith South Farm and, you know, started working with him. And he just takes to it. He does what he's told. He's a good boy. And it just so happens that he has a lot of athletic ability. So he hasn't yet come upon something that's too hard for him to do. So he's currently like just living in blissful baby ignorance of the fact that what he's doing is actually hard for most horses. So yeah, I mean, I did my first cross country school the second week in January of 2012, and he did his first event a couple weeks later, and he evented novice all summer. He just won the Thoroughbred Incentive Program's Novice Champion Award at Waradaka. The Jockey Club has a really great program called the Thoroughbred Incentive Program.
Oh, we know all about it.
Yeah, yeah. So I signed him up for that, and I had two horses in the novice, and they were first and second, but Mosby edged out. You know, his dressage was very competitive. So he won. He has a very nice champion ribbon. and he will most likely go training at some point. Sort of February, March. My plan is to take lessons on him mostly through the winter/spring season because I think that's money better spent than competing a just 5-year-old. So.
Now I have to ask you before we go too much further, because you said about you taking lessons, and I know what your answer is going to be, but it wouldn't be right if I didn't ask. so do we have any gossip on who the coach, your next coach, is going to be?
Released at the end of, or the middle of October, I suppose. Clayton Fredericks has got the job.
Oh, see, we missed the he got the job part, I guess.
No, we did not.
Yeah,
talked about this. Seriously?
Well, I thought
he
was just in the running, that it wasn't official yet.
Does
we
somebody need to get you another cup of coffee? Did you forget?
I guess. So are you excited about that?
I am. I know nothing about him except for, obviously, his success as a rider, and I have a lot of faith in the Equine Canada High Performance Committee that was in charge of selecting him, and I know that they will have put us in a great situation. So I'm going to split my lesson time between Clayton and David. You know, David's input, it means a lot to me. He knows me as a rider. It's been a lot of years that I've been working with him, and if it's not broken, don't fix it. But I want to introduce myself to Clayton and get in the door with that program.
Definitely.
And I'm
let me tell you the way to get in with Clayton, okay? This is the surefire way to impress him when you meet him to ride him, because I absolutely adore him. I love his training methods. What he's going to do in your first lesson is he's going to remove your horse's nose band. He will take it off. He does not ride any horses with a nose band. So just do it ahead of time. Roll up to the lesson with no nose band, and he'll be like, oh, my God, that girl's got it. She knows
well, everything. You'll like me. Neither of my young horses go in a flash or anything, so he'll like that.
Yeah. Nose band, take it all off. He says they lean against it. He's like, but if it's just the lower jaw, then they can't lean against it. They carry themselves. So this whole deal about the nose band. So there you go. Just a little heads up.
I'm really interested to introduce some new things into my program. You know, I think there's something to be taken from everyone, and I'm really excited.
Well, Stephanie, before we let you go here, if I was to invest in Seahawk and become part of the syndicate, what does the investor really get out of it? You know, and if you end up selling the horse, do they get anything back? How's that work?
Well, most syndicates are operated as an LLC, so there is actually a pretty extensive paperwork outlining everybody's agreement. You know, it makes sure to cover almost every little question that you may have going forward, so that everyone who buys in is in agreement with all of these issues, so that any situation that comes up in the future, you already have the answer. You didn't have to do it. So I think every agreement is tailored to suit the needs of everybody involved, but the buy-in share buys you, you know, whatever the, you know, 5, 10, 15% of the horse. So moving forward, you own that amount. So if the horse doesn't turn out to be a, you know, advanced level contender and you end up selling them as a preliminary or two-star horse or something, you own whatever percent you bought. So obviously the increase in value is the goal. And then also there's provisions for the less ideal circumstances, like if the horse gets hurt or can't continue their career.
Right.
But you have all that outlined beforehand, so there's no nasty surprises along the way. Actually, the guidelines for syndicate ownership are pretty well listed. If you go to the USCF site, which is experienceeventing.com, the Canadian program doesn't have anything sort of documented for all of this quite yet. I believe it's something that's being worked on. But the USEF Owner Task Force has a great website that I have very gratefully used as a resource. So experienceeventing.com, there's several documents that outline kind of all the questions that people have to answer for their own group before they move forward. And then besides, like, the owning the share and maybe selling the horse down the road, ownership gives you, you know, the ability to get a little higher access at bigger competitions down the road, recognition for, you know, outstanding results, that feeling of being part of a team. And I believe that they're working on a more comprehensive way of being able to get a bit of a tax break. I don't think that's quite a clear thing yet in Canada, but we're looking into sort of all the ways that the owners can get some kind of benefit out of it, so it's not just like, oh, yeah, we own that horse, which is fun enough in itself. But
and most importantly, Stephanie, people, they get to talk to you. That's the most
important
part.
That is a huge part of the relationship that I have with my current owners. You know, I have 7 horses in my barn right now. I own 2 of them. The rest of them are privately owned. And my owners are like my family. You know, some of the horses are for sale. Some of them are longer term. But it's a huge sense of community, and it's a team. And we keep in touch with each other very regularly. They come and watch their horses go and compete, and it's really fun. So it's a way to get out there to the competitions and be more involved than just as a spectator. And you don't necessarily have to foot the bill for the whole horse if there's a group of people.
Well, now what's your website so we can give it out here?
My website is SRB, that's my initials, SRB Equestrian Sports, and it's .wordpress.com.
Okay, we'll post a link to that on our Facebook page and our show notes for this episode as well. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us. We love the Canadian Inventors. We always have. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. Right. Thank you.
All right, bye, Stephanie.
Bye, Steph.
You could hear the wind blowing as she was riding along there. It's so cool when they're riding when we talk to them.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have 7 horses that you have to ride every day in your barn. You do whatever you can while you're sitting on a horse.
Yeah, it's true. Well, let's call it a day here. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. You have a terrific day tomorrow. Give your horses a carrot from all of us here at Horses in the Morning. It looks like we've gotten a good reaction. I want to mention again that we do have a Horse Radio Network merchandise store now open. We're getting a good reaction to that on Facebook. So you can go to hrnstore.com or find a link to it on any of our websites, horsesinthemorning.com as well. But we have hats and saddle pads and bugs and different things that you can purchase that have our cool logo on it. And there is some Horses in the Morning stuff there as well. So if you would like a specific, we're going to try and get all the shows eventually, but we started with Horses in the Morning because it's our most popular show and has the most number of listeners at this point, and we'll add to it as we go.
Hold on.
Now,
First of all, I don't have a coffee mug. I don't have a shirt. I don't have a canvas tote. I work here. I don't have any of this stuff.
Christmas is coming, Janie. Christmas is coming.
Great. Thanks. Awesome.
Thank you, everybody. Have a fantastic Thanksgiving. We'll see you back here live on Monday morning, and we have a very special show for you planned on Friday as well. You have a great weekend with the fam there, Jamie.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving. Everybody enjoy, eat some tofurkey, and spay, neuter, and kill.
Tofurkey.
Delicious. Just have to marinate it.
Yeah, for about a month.